thank you for coming, everyone. As was mentioned, I'll be talking about how we can increase dissemination of evidence-based interventions through the use of technology, particularly as they relate to community-engaged research. I also have nothing to disclose. And just a quick overview, I'll start with a quick discussion of dissemination and implementation research and how we are bringing that into our research in our lab and the role of technology. I'll also go over a background of Project HEAL and what we're doing and how we're training our community health advisors. I'll quickly go over our study group comparisons of our efficacy data for our participants and the implications of this research. So dissemination implementation research has become an emerging field, particularly within community-based research. We have a lot of really great evidence-based interventions that have been found to be efficacious and effective, but we're kind of just shelving these away in our libraries of interventions, and we're not putting these into practice as we should be. So technology is something we can use to help fill in this gap, and we'll discuss today how we can use that to maybe increase the success of implementation and dissemination of these interventions. So you might be familiar with the NIH roadmap. This shows how we can take bench research to bedside and on to practice. And we're focusing really on this bedside to practice and this practice-based research. So our lab is focusing on T3 dissemination implementation research and how we can really put these into practice well. So Project HEAL is Health Through Early Awareness and Learning. This is an NCI-supported study. It's an R01 implementation trial. We are on our fifth year. We have 6 years. We received our no-cost extension, so we're beginning to close out our study now. We work through African-American churches to test two strategies of implementing evidence-based interventions, focusing on breast, prostate, and colorectal cancer. We're working out of Prince George's County, right outside of the Washington, D.C. area, and we're working directly with these churches for our project. We use a lay community health advisor approach where within each of our churches, the church identified two individuals to serve as the community health advisors, and they're who we trained to then deliver a workshop series, and they did all of the participant recruitment and led kind of our liaison within the church to bring this within their specific church. So background of Project HEAL, it originally developed as three individual interventions by our principal investigator, Dr. Holt. They were individually focused on breast, prostate, and colorectal cancer. And as an implementation trial, we then repackaged this into one overarching intervention called Project HEAL, where we bring all of these together and talk about all of these three cancers within our project. We have a cluster randomized design where we then randomize our churches into either the traditional classroom training and the technology-based child training. And this really focuses on how we trained our community health advisors to bring it within the church. And we have 8 churches in our traditional design and 6 in our technology-based design. This is an overview of the workshop series. We start with our CHA training and certification, where we have the churches within one of those two technology-based or traditional classroom approaches. We then have the CHAs lead themselves the 3 workshop series. So we are in attendance, but they're the ones leading these workshops, focusing first on cancer overview. The second workshop, the men and women break apart. The men talk about prostate cancer. The women talk about breast cancer. And then they come back together in workshop 3 and they talk about colorectal cancer screening, as well as how spirituality and health can be integrated into all of this. This is a spiritually based project within these churches, so we do bring in scripture as to how it can relate to our population. We then talk about local resources, so what resources are available for these individuals within the Washington, D.C. area. Where can they go for free screening? Where are their cancer support groups? What is available for them? We want to make sure that we don't talk about cancer screening, leave it at that. We want to facilitate their ability to go get screened or talk to a doctor. We then have a 12-month follow-up. 1 year later, we actually go back as a research team, and we then deliver what we found at the baseline survey, and we just report back our findings to our congregants and our participants. We have enrollment at all the 3 workshops really to maximize our enrollment. We have the baseline survey then at each of those 3 workshops. At the end of workshop 3, we have a post-session survey. And then we have our 12-month survey right during the 12-month workshop. So an overview of the two training approaches. Our traditional classroom approach is a minimum of 6 hours in person. It's either two sessions of 3 hours or 6 hours on a Saturday where we sit down in a lecture-style classroom format and go over all of the material. They have an in-person knowledge exam where they have to pass with at least an 85% to become a certified Project Yield CHA. And then they have maximum technical assistance as requested. So we really, you know, tell them if you have questions, come see us. And this carries out through all the workshop series where we ask, you know, what help they need. Are we providing a projector and a screen? What can we do to help really facilitate the continuation of Project HEAL within their churches? Conversely, with our technology-based approach, we have a self-paced web-based training. All of the information mirrors that of the traditional classroom approach, but what we took the PowerPoint slides and we simply narrated them with different research team members. It's not just my voice they're listening to for 6+ hours, that'd be really boring. So we have a wide variety of voices that they're able to listen to this presentation. Then they also have the same exam. This is just online instead of an in-person exam, so they can complete it and they can retake it as many times as needed. And then we have minimal technical assistance. This is a more passive approach. If they really need it, they can reach out to us and we're not going to say no, but we don't really fully state to them, you know, that we were going to help out. So we try to have them be as resourceful as they can themselves, and we're just there as we need to be. Regardless of the training group, we have materials that are provided to all of our CHAs, including a training manual, a cancer resource guide. So this is, again, what resources are available for the community should one of their congregants want access to, you know, free screenings, or they need to see a urologist or whatever it might be. We have a list available for them. We provide recruitment flyers for them to post around their church. And then we give them pre-made educational workshop slides for that 3-workshop series. So participant demographics, so these are who the community health advisors recruited to come to the workshop series. All participants self-identified as African Americans, and our churches actually self-identified as African American. These are churches in the suburban county outside of Washington, D.C. We recruited 375 participants at baseline. The majority of them were women. The average age was 55. A part of the eligibility was that they needed to be between 40 and 75, this meeting or matching the screening recommendations broadly for the 3 cancers. About half of them were married, a median education of some college, and a mean household income of 50 to 60,000. So for our efficacy analysis that I'll present today, I'm going to go over a study group comparison, so our traditional classroom versus our technology-based approach, a comparison over time, and then a group-by-time interaction. We'll be showing the cancer knowledge outcomes and then the cancer screening behaviors individually to see how they compared over time and across group. So we'll start with breast cancer knowledge. So this was administered to women only. The max score for this was a 6. So we can see that over time we did have a significant increase in knowledge from baseline to 12 months. And then for percent that ever had a mammogram, it's already pretty high at baseline, 93 to 96%. So we do have kind of a ceiling effect there. However, we did see an increase at our 12 months. I should note that we did knowledge at baseline, post-session, and 12 months. We only assess screening behaviors at 12 months. I don't expect someone to run out and get a colonoscopy at workshop 3 right away. We need to give them a little bit of time before we see that happen. But for breast cancer knowledge and mammogram, we did see an increase over time. For prostate cancer, these questions were administered to men only. We did see differences over time. As you can see, we saw an increase from baseline to post-session, and then it kind of dipped a little bit at 12 months. So we are doing a 24-month follow-up right now, so it'll be interesting to see how that might have been retained or lost as far as prostate cancer knowledge among the men. And then we saw a group difference for prostate-specific antigen tests. And if you're not familiar with prostate cancer screening, this is a blood test that is used, or one of the methods used for prostate cancer screening. So we did see an increase in our technology group, but not our traditional group. And then the other test that many men seem to enjoy, the digital rectal exam, and we did see an increase over time for this. And lastly, we have our colorectal cancer results. So this was administered to both men and women. We did ask the questions amongst all ages, but for these analyses, they're for individuals 50 to 75, which meets the cancer screening recommendation ages. So we do see both a differences between the two groups, and we also see an increase over time from baseline to 12 months. And then we similarly here for the FOBT, this is the blood stool test where you take a little bit on a card, a little bit of a stool sample, and they mail it into your doctor. We did see, again, differences between group and then over time as well. For flexible sigmoidoscopy, this is not one of our very popular screening tests. We did not see any differences over time. And it should be noticed that the methods we use for the analyses, there might be differences in sample size, which may be a reason for the differences in percentages, the decrease for 12 months compared to baseline. And then for colonoscopy, we did see an increase over time from baseline to 12 months. So we can see here we did see cancer knowledge increases over time, except for maybe that prostate cancer we saw a decrease back at 12 months. Screening increases over time for mammography. Again, this was already high at baseline. Increases for the DRE, the FOBT for colorectal cancer, and colonoscopy. And interestingly, we found study group differences for the PSA, colorectal cancer knowledge, and the FOBT. And we're doing some more analyses to figure out why there's study group differences. These were randomized, so the churches were randomized, so we shouldn't be seeing group differences at baseline. And we don't have any demographic differences between the two groups as well. So we're digging around in our data to see why we're finding the study group differences. So for most of these study outcomes, the lay community health advisors that were trained using the web-based methods were as effective as those using traditional in-person methods. So what this means is that when we go out to the community and we're trying to minimize our costs and our time in the community and maximize impact with these interventions, that training community health advisors using a web-based training where I'm not sitting there in a classroom for 6+ hours and they're not sitting in a classroom and they can pace themselves online at home, this might be a great way to increase our accessibility using these interventions while reducing costs and time as well. So what's next for Project HEAL? As I mentioned, we're currently completing our 24-month follow-up assessments. This will be our last time out in the community for these workshops within a formal setting. We're still maintaining partnerships with these churches. 11 of our 14 churches have already completed the 24-month workshops. We actually had one this past weekend, and I'll be back out there again next weekend doing another workshop. So it is, as I mentioned, an implementation trial, so our data doesn't stop at the participant level. We're also assessing church organizational factors. We have a church survey that all of the pastors or a delegate completed. And we're going to use this data to see how that might be related to participant and implementation outcomes. So can we identify within these churches factors that might signify, you know, greater ease of implementing the workshop or maybe increasing sustainability? So are there churches we can say, okay, this church is going to be able to implement it with ease and we don't have to be there very much? Or with this church, they might need a little bit more technical assistance. So we know in advance, you know, how involved we need to be so we can make sure that we're maximizing our success within this church. We're also looking at sustainability. So we're asking these churches at 12 and 24 months, you know, have you done more health workshops? Maybe they redid the Project HEAL series. We had churches that have gone out to other churches and have done the same workshop series, or they're doing health fairs or bringing in other individuals to talk about diabetes or doing their own health workshops. So we're seeing, you know, our goal isn't just to increase cancer screening or awareness. We're really trying to bring in, you know, other health activities within these churches and increase their organizational capacity as well. So we do have two articles out, one in AJPH and the other in Implementation Science, that talk about the development of Project HEAL, particularly the first one in AJPH was published last year. And this talks about the development of our web-based training. So if you're interested in seeing more about how we actually did this, I suggest hitting up that article and then email me if you have questions. I'd like to acknowledge our project team. Dr. Holt is our principal investigator. We have a great co-investigator team. Sherry Liu is with us, our great project manager. And then we have community partners that without them, we would not be doing anything out in the community at all. And then I think we're holding questions till the end. Thank you.
Thank you.